Welcome to the Brew Crew Review Podcast, the show by fans for fans of your Milwaukee Brewers.
All right, Brewer fans, welcome to the Brew Crew Review Podcast with myself, Craig, and co-host Vince. How are you doing, Vince?
I'm doing great, Craig. How are you?
Good, good. And it was great to see you back in Milwaukee for opening day, which is, I know, your tradition. Unfortunately, the weather conditions were a little less than ideal, to be quite frank. However, the Brewers did come away with an opening day victory, which is pretty cool. So how was your visit back to Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, it was great to see some baseball. Obviously, great to be back at the ballpark. Great to see the Brewers. It's a sign of renewal in spring for me every single year, as I know it is for you, Craig. I will also say, though, that it was much, much, much colder up in Wisconsin than it was either before I left Texas or now that I'm back in Houston, where, we were sitting out by a pool yesterday. So, yeah, it was different weather, but great to be able to watch some baseball again, for sure.
And when I walk into the stadium, I did see quite a few people hunker down inside their parked vehicles, and I think enjoying some libations.
we did make a tailgate party out of it. So there was that. I know that you and I got together a little bit after that point, but we did hang out for at least a couple hours outside, and I'm not divorced, but I don't know that my Texan-born wife is going to be joining us again for an opening day of tailgate party anytime soon.
Dang it.
pretty miserable experience. I'm sure she'll be back in reality, but
well, it's mid-60s, yeah, that one was this cold. Week. So with global warming, tell her I think by next year we should be a lot better weather, but
I'll be sure to let her know.
All right. Well, let's talk about the Brewers' start to the season. Obviously the Pat Murphy era has kicked off in a pretty fine fashion. And we opened on the road by sweeping the Mets, and of course won an opening day. Our overall record through 9 games is 6-3, good enough for second place in the NL Central. The surprising Pittsburgh Pirates are actually in first to kick off the season here. I don't know. I guess my early takeaway on the season is I think that we're just as good as any other team in the NL Central, and there's really no standout team, and this is going to be a dogfight all season long with basically all five teams. I almost feel like all five teams could almost win this division at this point.
Yeah, I think that I'd even mentioned that on our last podcast or two podcasts ago, and that I honestly could see the Brewers finishing anywhere between fifth and first. I mean, in this division, I don't really think that we're going to finish fifth. I do think that we are markedly more talented than the Cubs and probably the Cardinals as well. But I will say this, the teams in this division, I think, are more evenly matched than any other division in baseball. I don't think that there's a clear basement dweller in this division as there are in I think every other division in baseball, and even the traditional cellar dweller, the Pirates, as you point out, it started off the year very well. I don't foresee them necessarily being a first place team or being a team that's going to obviously be able to carry on with the rates they are winning right now, but I do think that they are better iteration of the Pirates this season than they have been in many other seasons in the last 10 or so years.
Yep. And the Brewers hitting so far has really been pretty exciting. Our pitch, obviously, Freddie Peralta's had a good start of the year, and I think it's going to be our number 2 through 5 plus starters that are going to have to really carry us to success this season, which is a little bit worrisome, I guess. But with that being said, there's been even some surprise contributors. I mean, Oliver Dunn, who I think is only on the team because of like injury, is basically been hitting anywhere from like cleanup to lead off and getting in there almost every day, which is kind of a surprise contributor here early on. But Bryce Terang has also had a phenomenal start statistically this season. I think he leads like the majors and stolen bases at this point. Overall, kind of a nice way to get out of the gates. And I will say one of my favorite moments so far in the early season was I won't say I was listening at work, but it was a work day. And I was listening the day after opening day to Bob Uecker call Jackson Trujillo's first major league home run at home for the Brewers. And that was pretty cool to hear that on the radio. Bob Uecker calling the 90-year-old Bob Uecker calling a the 20-year-old Jackson Trio, like 7 years as his junior, his first major league home run. It's kind of interesting to think that Bob Uecker was already in baseball for several decades and 7 years old when Jackson Trio was born. So pretty cool.
Well, to kind of further paint the picture, Jackson Trio was born the same year that the Brook Review started as a television show back in West Allis in 2004. So I just wanted to point that out too. So all of Churio's career, his ability to get to this point, is growing up in Venezuela, is playing throughout the Venezuelan leagues, is being, you know, signed by the Brewers as an international free agent and getting up to as high as AAA last year and then making his Brewers debut this year, has all happened during the lifespan of the Brook Review and since Scotty was at Pato. So just wanted to point that out.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, yep. No, that's time has been flying, but that is pretty cool. Our 20th anniversary of the Brook Review is coming up later this summer. So hopefully we can have some kind of special celebration for that in some regards, maybe a reunion of sorts. But overall, yeah. I'm pretty ecstatic about how the Brewers have started the season. And there's a lot of younger players to be excited about, especially on the offensive side. But even on the pitching side, I think D.L. Hall has put in some – I mean, he really looks like he's going to be someone that's going to be a mainstay in the rotation. I think that there could be a year or two of kind of growing pains as he gets his, you know, legs under him as a starting pitcher and learns to face, you know, to adjust to Major League Baseball hitters. But, I mean, overall, I really feel that he's going to be – at minimum, in my mind, at least a number three starter if he is able to stick in the rotation, if not higher. So,
yeah, he's been great. I don't know if we want to get into guys who you've, you know, been most impressed with or surprised by this season, Craig, or not. But I just wanted to give some kudos to Bryce Terang. The guy is just playing out of his mind. He was already a great defensive player as a rookie last season. That has just continued and even improved, in my opinion, here in 2024. But just looking at his numbers, Scotty's intern just handed me his current line. He's hitting .379 right now with a .424 OBP. He's got one home run, seven RBIs, and seven stolen bases, which is, in fact, leading the National League right now in his nine games and 29 at-bats. It's pretty incredible, obviously, small sample size alert, as we are only nine games into the season. But that is a pretty stellar track record for Bryce Terang. And Pat Murphy spoke about Bryce and his improvements and some of the adjustments that he's made throughout the offseason and into spring training. And I think you're starting to see some of those results on the field. Obviously, he's not going to be able to maintain a .379 batting average throughout the course of the entire season. But I really, really love watching that guy play. I think that he has been the guy who I've been most excited about seeing this season and seeing some of his improvements.
Yeah, and I think Pat Murphy even called out this, that he's going to surprise a lot of people this year and really have a breakout and hopefully gets almost every day at bats. Right now he's kind of strong side of platoon, but I think he's earned himself almost every day at bats. And, yeah, I'd love to see him develop against some left-hander pitching as well. So that's exciting. The other kind of early season surprise standout has been Abner Uribe. And, obviously, I made the wrong call on that where I really thought they were going to go with a more of a veteran to with Devin Williams out in that role with the other Piamps or McGill. But it's been Abner Uribe getting the most saves so far in the early season. He's looked pretty electric doing it. And really his one bugaboo coming into this year has really been his walk rate has been pretty horrific, even for a reliever, but especially through his minor league career. But it looks like he's settling in a little bit. I think he'll go through some ups and downs too, but I wouldn't be surprised if he really locks down the closer role until Williams gets back. And it really leads me to believe that he's going to be our closer of the future as of the end of this year, most likely. And it'd be surprising if once Devin Williams shows himself healthy before the end of this year, that he may be, you know, on his way out of Milwaukee as a pretty valuable trade ship at some point here between now and definitely the next year's trade deadline, I would say.
Yeah, he could be. And that's, you know, obviously a debate that I think we're probably going to continue to have throughout the next two seasons or until something actually does happen with Devin. But I really wouldn't be opposed to the Brewers kind of having that back end of the bullpen again with that dominant eighth inning pitcher and that dominant closer reliever in the ninth that you can just rely on night in and night out, sort of like what we had with Josh Hader and Devin Williams for several seasons, even though both were capable of being closers. I think that you saw the Brewers have both of those guys in the pen from 2019 through at least half of 2022 until we traded Hader. And I remember other Brewers bullpens in the past that in some of our most successful seasons, I keep going back to that 2011 team where we had Ackford and K-Rod. And even before those two guys, we had Hawkins and I'm trying to think of who else was out there that season, but you know, you had at least three or four, Takashi Saito was the fourth guy. You had four quality arms, guys who had closing experience at the back end of that bullpen. And it essentially made these games like 5 or 6 inning games. So as long as the starter was able to go 5 quality innings, you really could, in most games, count on that back end of the bullpen. So I would love to see the Brewers continue to keep both Uribe and Williams for the duration of Williams's contract, and who knows after that. But I really like that strong back end of the bullpen that the Brewers have kind of focused on in our most successful seasons.
Yeah, that's some good points. And obviously, I think it would be best for the organization, you know, for the 2024 and 2025 Brewers, for them to keep Williams. But we'll see it, you know, what they feel the best way to, what to do with Williams going forward. But yeah, we do have control over him, team control through the 2025 season, like you pointed out. So we still have over a year and a half, hopefully him showing himself healthy to make that determination on what we'd like to do with him. So, but yeah, overall, I mean, this is team, like I said, it's hard to really pinpoint how this team is going to play out. I just think we are going to remain pretty competitive and right there in the thick of the playoff race and even the race for the NL Central. Again, just looking at long term, I still think that, you know, our starting pitching is going to be kind of our Achilles heel at some point. With that being said, kudos going out to Colin Ray, who is exceeding my expectations quite literally ever since he, you know, stepped into a Brewer uniform. And I didn't have many expectations for him, but I think he's really solidified himself. And we still have not had a healthy Wade Miley, who should be coming back soon. Aaron Ashby just came back up. I know that Jake Eunice had a nice start early in the season, but now he's going on the IL.
Craig, some breaking news just quickly handed to me by our intern. Ashby was actually just sent down in the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, I did see that too. But he did make a spot start, and you know, I think that probably signals that Miley's probably ready to come off the DL the next time Ashby's spot comes up. But I do think we'll see Ashby again, and I still expect things from Gasser this year too. So yeah, and I guess the other guy I don't have huge expectations for, but it'd be nice to see him bounce back from his long-term injury, and that'd be Joe Ross in the rotation. Yep. As a number 5 star. So again, I think a lot of the success on this year's team is going to kind of come down to a handful of those number, pretty much beyond Peralta, Miley, and DL Hall, who I think will get a lot of starts in the rotation this year, pretty much our 4 through 8 starters, and how well they are able to fare as we go through the season. But I am pretty excited. I think that they've done a pretty good job, as they always do, of building a pretty strong bullpen. The one other early season standout was that the guy that we acquired from the Dodgers, left-handed pitcher Brian Hudson, who has put together a pretty nice start to the season as well. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Hey, Craig, I know I had to skip the pre-production meeting today, but did you talk to our anonymous source about the extent of Robert Gasser's injury and when we can expect to see Gasser come back or perhaps be up in Milwaukee?
Tom C.
Himself and talked about that. Yeah.
Or I mean, T. Carter. He likes to not use his name and just be anonymous if possible. He does think that Gasser could miss the better part of April in the minor league. So he'll probably have a little stretch run in the beginning of May, assuming that he does recover. And so, unfortunately, I think that puts his timeline of getting his first made, you know, his up with the Brewers, probably not until mid to late May. After that point, it would kind of be just based on need too, or where we're at as a team. So I do think he will get some major league innings this year, but unfortunately that injury has delayed probably a good month into where we could have thought to see him in the major leagues, but we'll see. I do think he's pretty underrated and an arm to be excited about. So we shall see.
Okay. Yeah.
But the other guy that kind of stood out early in the season, obviously from you know, the first game of the season. But that's Rhys Hoskins, who, as all of our viewers know and listeners, Brewer fans know that Rhys Hoskins had a little bit of a dust up with Jeff McNeil on the Mets. And I think it just kind of showed the mentality of this team that it's going to have a little bit of different edge than just a Craig Council run team, I feel. And Rhys Hoskins obviously already had a history with altercations with the Mets and whatnot. So this might not be a Brewer thing, but I mean, overall, I just think that Pat Murphy is going to be a different style manager than Craig Council in some ways. And we shall see. So far, he seems to be a real big fan of Oliver Dunn. He's given him plenty of starts and whatnot. But overall, I'm pretty happy with how he's using things. I do give him kudos for go ahead and giving the ninth inning save opportunities to Abner Uribe all the way from the first day of the season, which is pretty surprising. So I think that shows what he actually thinks of the young fireballer, I guess.
Yeah, and I know that Uribe has had some pretty electric outings. He is currently sitting at a 6.75 ERA, so he has been roughed up in at least one of those appearances. But I think it was just pretty much one bad outing. And I'm glad to see Uribe in that role. I think it's exciting, and I've been very excited about the Pat Murphy era. I think that, as you alluded to, there's a spark, there's an excitement around the team right now, and I don't think it's something that is just because it's the first, week and a half of the season. I do think that this is sort of the Murphy brand compared to, the Craig Council brand, which, I hate to say it, and I don't want a Monday morning quarterback with this, but it was a little bit more blasé. You had a little bit more of a script. Just you look at the body language of the two managers. I saw a couple, memes on social media this week, and it was kind of funny looking at some of the body language positions that guys were taking, like between Murphy and Council. And it just seems like there's a lot of spark and excitement in the dugout. I don't want to go back and rehash Craig Council's tenure in Milwaukee every single episode that we do, but I do think that especially in the first, season here, we're going to continue to do that with Pat Murphy. And I'm actually really happy that it's Pat Murphy at the helm right now for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that this happened after our last episode, but possibly not. But I think Garrett Mitchell's injury did happen shortly after we did the last taping of our podcast. So that is one other thing that luckily our outfield depth really helped here, because I think that we had a surplus going into the season. This just shows how important depth is at the Major League Baseball level, because I think there were some plans on getting Sale Frelick's at bat and lineup at third base, especially against right-handers. And now that the Mitchell injury, Frelick has been regularly back the outfield pretty much on an everyday basis, and probably won't get his third base experiment on until Mitchell or someone else is back to help in the outfield. So Mitchell sounds like, unfortunately, he fractured his hand toward the end of spring training on a hit by a pitch or on a swing, actually. And that's really unfortunate, because he's going to miss first couple months of the season. It is a little bit frustrating, because he's starting to get to that stage, and again, he's still such a young guy, but like he's starting to get that like stigma of someone who gets injured quite often. And maybe that's not fair to him, but some of those guys are pretty frustrating to have on your team at some point. So I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I kind of think that these are sort of one-off types of injuries. They're not career threatening. They're not injuries that continually get aggravated. It's like, I almost just think it's bad luck. I don't view this as being a black mark against Garrett by any stretch of the imagination. I think that, it just happens sometimes in baseball. And I don't really like the term snake bit. I think that it's something that, implies that there's something nefarious, or that the player's doing something wrong, or, that he's not conditioning himself correctly and putting himself in a bad position. I don't think that's the case with Garrett at all. I'm not saying that you're saying that. I just don't like the connotation of it. And I think that Garrett will be back, another month and a half. And hopefully we see Garrett Mitchell make some key contributions down the stretch. And to be honest, I give Garrett a ton of credit for making it back on the field at the end of last season after suffering a pretty severe shoulder injury last year in May. And so I look at it kind of a different way. I view Mitchell's dedication to conditioning and perseverance coming back from injury as being a real strong suit of his. So hopefully he can avoid some of these random fluke injuries in the future.
Well, in no way am I suggesting giving up on the guy any chance, but the frustration level is starting to set in a little bit as a fan. I mean, But with that being said, I still do feel like he has all-star level upside, and he hasn't really had his opportunities at the major level enough to show that. And I was really excited for him to get that opportunity this year, and hopefully we still will contribute in the last 4 months of the season. But for now, we'll have to hold down the fort with what we have in-house. And like I said, one of the strengths of this Brewers regime is building depth and versatility, and this is how you see how it really comes into play. I mean, baseball has changed so much over the last many decades. But, I mean, back when, you know, we were younger kids or whatever, like, there'd be guys that played every single day, and not just Cal Ripken, but, I mean, they were the starters at position. There was no platoon. The bench guys hardly ever got in the lineup at all. And these guys would literally come to play every day, and I guess if there were minor injuries, they would just play through them. It seems like there's more major injuries, both on the pitching side with arm injuries, but also even on the hitter side, where a lot of guys are missing time. And that way, when you build in a platoon, if someone gets hurt, well, you have someone automatically there to replace them, or just the versatility and the depth that the Brewers build. You know, if you look at our infield right now, I mean, we're so covered on the left side of the infield with such depth, especially with Dunn, who was brought in via trade this offseason. You might be like, well, that's a little bit redundant, no pun intended. But I mean, we have Joey Ortiz, we have Bryce Terang. Willy Adames was not traded. We have Andre Monasterio, who can cover second and third as well. Then you bring in Dunn, and here you go. He's getting plenty of.
And Craig, we've even got Owen Miller, and we've got Tyler Black sitting in the minor leagues right now at AAA. So, you know, I do think that this organization has made depth a priority. And again, that's why I'm not overly frustrated with Mitchell. Yeah, I'd love to have his bat in the lineup. I'd love to experiment with Sal Frelick at third base and have that flexibility. But, you know, I don't think that we're necessarily losing anything right now with having, you know, Oliver Dunn, who's hitting over 300 up with the big league club right now. And Joey Ortiz is playing great defense. I know he had an error last night, but overall, I've been incredibly impressed with Ortiz as well. So I view this as kind of an opportunity to see what guys have over an extended period of 6 to 8 weeks that otherwise might not get as many at bats with Mitchell in the lineup. So I'm kind of excited to see what happens when we put it all together. But the reality of baseball is that you're always going to have injuries. You're very rarely ever going to have a team that's playing with 100% of their roster intact or their starting lineup intact. So this is just part of the game. And the Brewers, I think, are very wise to focus on both organizational depth and depth generally and bench depth as well. So, you know, I think it's a sign of strength of the team's overall philosophy.
Yep. And also, I should point out that Jackson Chourio has had a great spring, won his spot really as a starter on the team, even after the big contract he signed. But I mean, he's had a great start to the season. And I mean, he's definitely as advertised in my opinion. And I think he's going to be a superstar. So again, it's interesting that Murphy's been batting him a lot of times, either lead off or against left-handers, but then against righties all the way down to the ninth spot in the lineup. So there's obviously some reasoning behind that for him, but I do like the fact that he's putting him in not too many high pressure situations, especially against right-handers. But at some point, obviously, this guy's gonna be hitting in the middle of our lineup for years to come. So but you know, I think he's handling it is pretty interesting, I guess, at this point.
Yeah, I know that our co-host Scott did not give him a very glowing scouting report, one of the few negative scouting reports I've ever heard on Jackson Chourio. But in my opinion, Chourio is stepping up to the plate admirably. He's 20 years old. You know, we're only 9 games into the season, but I'm very impressed with Jackson Chourio so far. And I think that what you're seeing on the field at the big league level is only going to improve when you hear, you know, guys only reaching their peak when they're, you know, 27, 28, 26, somewhere in that couple season range. It's really exciting to think that Jackson Chourio is already this good at the big league level at 20 years old. Two bombs on the year already too.
Yep, absolutely. So, all right, Brewer fans, so thanks for tuning in and listening. I don't know if you have anything else to add this episode, Vince, but
yeah, cool. I do. I've got a quick tidbit from the Brewers history department. I do think it's relevant. So with Aaron Ashby being sent down to the minor leagues today, the Brewers called up a guy who we've never probably talked about on this show, Kevin Hergett. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly because I didn't get our notes from the intern here before the show. This all was just kind of breaking as we went on the air here, but maybe Kevin Hergett, Kevin Hergett. In any event, Kevin Hergett is a reliever. He's got a little bit of big league experience, pitched with Cincinnati last season. But the reason why I'm bringing it up is not just because he was recalled, but Craig, did you know that Kevin Hergett when he does appear in a major league game, will be Brewer number 1,000 in the team's history in Milwaukee since 1970.
Oh, wow. That's exciting. Interesting.
Yeah. So we had Joe Ross was number 999. Jacob Unis was 998. We started the year, I think we've got nine guys who have played for the team this season. I can check my notes on that, but nine guys, I believe it is, who played for the team this season that had not been a Brewer before this year. And I know that our colleague Mike DeSalo has tweeted it out now as well, but my account was officially correct, and it will be Kevin Hergett when he appears in the game. That will be number 1,000. I just checked our notes too. We have 10 new Brewers who played for the team for the first time here in 2024, and Hergett would be number 11.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I guess congratulations to him once he makes the call and officially becomes a Brewer, and expect to be chased down by Vince Trovato for your autograph.
Absolutely. Part of the Brewers all-time project. You know it. I'll be putting a letter to him in the mail next week. So as soon as he appears in the game. But in any event, thought that might be of interest to our listeners. We've actually been tracking this on our social media since about 2021. I tweeted something that our interns had put out from that season when Ryan Weber, he of one game with the Brewers, made an appearance that season. And that was, he was number 922, and that was back in 2021 in June. So I know we've gone back at least that far. I think we started doing it on social media in 2018, looking at what number of guys were in the Brewers history as they made their appearance. So kind of an interesting, weird little quirk today that could potentially happen tonight in tonight's game in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and if we could have took a pool of bets on who would be Brewer number 1,000, I would have never picked Kevin Hergett. I'm sorry, but.
No, he didn't even make anybody's list whatsoever. So, you know, you kind of figure it might be a bullpen arm. I think I had speculated about that before, but, you know, the Brewers churn through the bullpen arm so much that when you saw that the opening day roster guys were going to get us to 999, it was a question of who was going to get called up first. But that means, you know, it could be a reliever, it could be a replacement for whoever gets injured first. And guys who had already been called up this year had already pitched for the or played for the team before. Guys like Ashby, who had, you know, been a Brewer in 2022 and 2021. So it was, yeah, kind of interesting this year to see how all that shaped up. But in any event, just throwing that out there for our listeners to kind of enjoy as a Ram Brewers history fact today.
Interesting. So, all right. Well, thanks again for tuning in, listeners. Make sure to go on out to American Family Field as soon as you can and check out the Milwaukee Brewers, an exciting young team. And make sure to tune back in to the Milwaukee Brewers podcast, as we'll have more up to the minute analysis here for the Milwaukee Brewers. And of course, special thanks to Scott's interns, all the ones that he has not let go yet. They're doing a fabulous job. And
give us a follow on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're BrewCrewReview1. You can email any of your questions to us, BrewCrewReviewPodcast@gmail.com. If you like the show, please leave us a positive rate and review on your favorite podcast listener.
All right. Stay classy, Kevin Hergett, and go Brewers.
Go Brewers. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, Chad.